Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So this is now episode 5. And in this episode, I wanted to talk to you about the changes at the life stage that is perimenopause in terms of body weight and body composition. And I'll touch on exercise as well, as the way we exercise and how much we do also changes, as in what's best for this phase, changes as we move past 40. I hope that it will be a insightful and helpful session for you. If you're, for example, frustrated by perimenopause or weight gain and wondering what on earth is going on, how to lose weight in your 40s, then I hope this episode will be helpful for you. So keep listening. So a lot of women just aren't aware that there is a change in how we kind of the distribution of our body weight and our body composition and our ability to burn fat, for example. A lot of women aren't aware that this does change as we move past 40. And so they just continue doing the same things that they were doing in their 20s and 30s, but they're no longer getting the same results or the same effects from it. And it can be really frustrating. So particularly gaining weight around the middle can be one of the most frustrating things that happens to a lot of women as they move into their 40s and through their 40s and up to, you know, even closer to 50 and beyond. It can feel like it happens overnight, despite not having changed anything, like, you know, the way you exercise or the way you eat. You can suddenly just turn up at 42, 43 and just think, where is this coming from? I haven't been doing anything differently. So if you're wondering what's going on, we're going to be getting into all of that. So firstly, I wanted to say that you might be hearing people talk in terms of this middle-age spread or metabolism slows down after 40, and therefore this belief that weight gain is just inevitable at this point and just something that we can't avoid and we have to kind of just, you know, just live with it and accept it. But this, it isn't true. I mean, yes, weight gain, particularly around the middle, is more likely from 40 plus, but there are things that we can be doing to prevent it or reverse it. And again, it's the powerful beauty of looking at our nutrition and lifestyle habits and really leveraging them to make this a much better scenario for us. Because yes, the body does become more prone to gaining weight 40 plus, but we can help to counteract it. So we're going to talk about why that is. And essentially, the hormonal changes that start from our late 30s, they start to create a metabolic shift in the body that makes women become sometimes like 3 times more likely to gain weight. And if we're not doing the helpful habits, the helpful things that can counteract that, then it's just going to continue. And for some women, it can really spiral. That's what I wanted to kind of get across in this session, in this episode, is that we, whilst this is the case physiologically, we can counteract it. And that's what's so great about this stuff. So the first issue that we bump into in our 40s is the new erratic roller coaster nature of estrogen that perimenopause brings and the declining levels of progesterone. So this is, I've talked about this in the previous, I think like episodes 2 and 3, I've gone into this in more detail, what's actually happening with estrogen and progesterone. So this is the first issue that we bump into. So now that we're in our 40s and this is what's going on with estrogen, this new hormonal picture starts to create a level of so-called metabolic dysfunction, which includes making us become more prone to something known as insulin resistance. And then there's also a change in how our body manages cortisol levels, because declining progesterone and erratic estrogen makes it harder to regulate our stress hormones as well as we were before. So in our 20s and 30s, we could regulate our stress hormones. Cortisol, it was easier to keep it in balance, basically to keep it in check. But we just become less resilient to that as we move into our 40s. And that, coupled with insulin resistance, which isn't necessarily, it doesn't mean that every woman is going to be insulin resistant, which I'll talk about more in a second, as they move into their 40s. It just means we're more prone to it. And sometimes we can have stages of temporary insulin resistance as we're like sort of early 40s, mid 40s, that can result in fat gain. So this, coupled with the change in our cortisol picture as well, can result in fat storage and muscle loss as well, which creates metabolic dysfunction. And if we're in a metabolically dysfunctional state, we're just, you know, that can sort of perpetuate unless it's solved. So now we're in a position where we're more prone to gaining fat mass, but there's also a redistribution of the fat mass in the body of where it is. So that can, for example, mean that fat stores can start to move from the hips, the breasts and the thighs, which are healthy spots for fat to accumulate, to the abdomen around the belly, which is not so healthy. It's not the most health protective place for fat to accumulate. So left unaddressed, this situation can lead to the typical like apple shape that we commonly see in some postmenopausal women. You might see it or experience a family member, for example, who's like, you know, complaining about it, just saying, I never used to be this shape. I used to be more of a pear shape. And as I've got older, I've become more of an apple shape. I've seen that a lot within the family as well. So a side note here is that this is why BMI, for example, so body mass index, is really irrelevant, really quite, you know, it's just irrelevant because it doesn't take body fat and muscle into account or the distribution of the fat mass. So for example, is there more fat accumulating around the middle than is healthy? Or is there a high level of visceral fat, which is the type of fat that sits around our organs and that can raise our risk of heart disease, liver disease and type 2 diabetes if it's too high? Body mass index doesn't tell us any of this. It literally just looks at your weight, your height, and then gives you a score. And we can't possibly say that everyone of a certain height and a certain gender should weigh a certain amount. There's just so much more to it than that. My BMI, if I was to look at it now, is probably really quite high towards the high end of the range. But I have a heavier body weight than someone else. My height and size, but who's to say, you know, it doesn't just because I have a heavier body weight than them, it doesn't mean that I'm less healthy than them because I'm heavier. There are other aspects that feed into my actual body weight, which I'll explain in a second. But some, you know, the same with body weight scales, your weight alone doesn't tell us much. It's what the weight's made up of that matters. So to use myself as an example, I have body composition scales at the gym. So these are scales that weigh, yes, they weigh you in weight, but they're also somehow looking at how much of your body is made up of fat and muscle, water and bone, for example. Now, none of these machines are going to be, you know, 100% accurate. In fact, you're never going to get a really accurate reading of something like this unless you have a DEXA scan, for example, which aren't easy to come by. But they can give you a kind of good indication. And if you're using the same scale, the same set of body composition scales, every time you take this reading, which you wouldn't need to do more than sort of every month at the most, but I just tend to do it every sort of few months at my gym. Using the same set of scales means I can get a good idea as to how I'm progressing or not progressing. But basically, when I weighed myself at the gym in February, I also got this reading of my fat mass and my muscle mass. And then last week, so this is early September, so 4 or 5 months later, I weighed myself again on the same set of scales. And according to those scales, I'd gained 3 kilos in weight. But I already don't care about that because, number one, I could have weighed myself at a different time of the day last time or a different point of my cycle. And therefore, I'm going to like just be weighing differently depending on water weight or hormonal weight. You know, our weight can fluctuate quite significantly just even throughout the day. But so of this extra 3 kilos that I gained, what I was also told by using these scales was that I'd lost one whole kilo of fat mass and gained 3 kilos of muscle mass. So really, who cares if I'd gained 3 kilos on the scales if most of that, if not all of it, had come from muscle and then I'd also lost some body fat? That's great. So I really hope that if you're someone who regularly weighs yourself or you're going by BMI, for example, that you don't you don't go by those things anymore because they're just not really, they're just not giving you the right information. Okay, so rant over. And also, they're not giving us the right information, but they're making people feel bad about themselves. So if I didn't know any of this and I didn't know to look at my muscle mass and my fat loss, I would have just seen that I'd gained 3 kilos and I've just walked away miserable when actually it was really good news. Okay, so rant over. Let's look at some of the factors at play in perimenopause weight gain, or in perimenopause that basically impact metabolic function and insulin control and therefore lead to weight gain. So we'll go through, I've got about 6 of them here. So the first one is the fact that our muscle mass is declining. So basically from around age 35 or even younger, I think around age 30, muscle mass both in men and women is starting to decline at a rate of about 1 to 2% per year. It doesn't sound like a lot, but obviously year on year on year, that all adds up if we're not putting it back, if we're not making efforts to put it back. So this starts to contribute to a slowing of our metabolism. It's a situation called sarcopenia, which is actually defined as age-related involuntary loss of skeletal muscle mass and strength. And like I said, it does apply to both men and women. In our 40s, as women going through those hormonal changes of estrogen and progesterone, it can sort of accelerate the rate of muscle mass that we lose per year. So we're kind of losing even more than what the normal sarcopenia rate is. And muscle mass is one of the biggest factors involved in how much energy or calories that we burn each day. So the less muscle mass you have, the less energy you burn at rest, and the more body fat you will hold on to or accumulate, or both. So muscle is its own organ. It's actually known as the organ of longevity, of healthy longevity. So the more muscle we have, the healthier we can be, the healthier we can age, you know, the more vital we're going to feel. Because muscle is crucial for so many aspects of our health, so from immune function and bone health to insulin regulation and metabolism, and therefore our ability to control, manage our weight. And the good news is that we can counteract this muscle loss as we age. In fact, we have to. We really must if we want good health. Obviously, if we want to keep our weight in check and our body composition healthy, but even just to be healthy, which is, of course, really, really important now and future health risks as well. So we do want to be counteracting it and making efforts to do that. So by doing things that support muscle building and maintenance of the muscle that we have, we can really reverse or prevent the negative impacts of losing this precious muscle mass, because it really is so precious. So for example, that would be exercise that involves lifting weights, also known as strength training, and eating optimal amounts of protein every day. Also, getting good sleep and managing stress is also really important as well for maintaining muscle mass, because poor sleep and chronic stress can actually break down muscle. This is something known as catabolic. So catabolic is like the breaking down of something, in this case, muscle, versus anabolic, which would be like the building up of muscle. So another thing that can be catabolic is doing too much long duration cardio or HIIT classes, spin classes, or boot camp style workouts. So these can increase cortisol so much that we start to break down muscle, because that's something that cortisol does in response to stressful situations. If we have high cortisol like all the time, that has the ability to break down our muscle, and the muscle that it breaks down can turn into fat, particularly around the middle. So that's why some women start to gain what they would call a muffin top when they start exercising. So for example, women in their 40s that start exercising or maybe increase their exercise and to include things like spin classes or these long so-called HIIT classes, like workouts like F45, for example, or even just too much running, they can start to gain this muffin top. And they think, why am I doing all this stuff? And I'm maybe eating healthier and I'm actually getting more body fat around the middle. And that can really be a reason. I see it all the time. I've seen it for years in women. And when they stop doing those things like their high intensity workouts, spin classes and long runs, and they actually switch it for shorter weightlifting sessions instead, and maybe, you know, plenty of walking and maybe a couple of yoga classes in the week, they actually start to lose the body fat around the middle because they're not making so much cortisol. And studies actually suggest that 2 to 3 strength sessions a week, so lifting weights a week for about 20 to 40 minutes, is actually ideal for muscle building and healthy body composition in women. So that's good news. I think that's quite easy for most of us to fit into our week. I do 3 strength training sessions a week. I could do more, but I prefer to just stick at 3 because I like to do other things. I go for a swim. I do lots of walking. I just like to have that freedom throughout the week to also do other things. So 3 strength sessions a week is what I do. But if the studies are showing 2 to 3 between 20 and 40 minutes, then if you only have 2 20-minute slots a week, you're still going to do, give a lot of benefits to yourself by doing that. So a lot of women, I say that because a lot of women can be of the mindset that if they don't have 3 or 4 or 5 one-hour slots each week to go to the gym, then they just don't do anything at all. But we don't have to. Like, less is actually more sometimes in this case. So if we can just find 2 20-minute, 30-minute slots a week, we're still doing really good, really well. And then the other thing for muscle building is protein. So the minimum optimal amount to eat per day is 1.5 grams per kilo of your ideal body weight. And the ideal body weight thing really just applies to someone who's quite significantly overweight. And then rather than use their current weight to do this calculation, they should use their ideal weight. But also bear in mind that a lot of people's ideal weight is actually quite a lot lower than what's realistic or what it kind of needs to be. I do hear a lot of women have goals of getting down to a certain number, and it's like the last time they were that number, they were sort of 20. And actually, it's quite unrealistic to think that they could do that again, because they'd probably have to do some horrible, restrictive, low calorie diets and exercise like mad. And whilst that might temporarily get them down to a certain body weight, it's not sustainable and it's not healthy and it's not conducive to muscle building and ideal body composition anyway. So just to bear in mind, if you're thinking of, okay, let me do this calculation with my ideal body weight, just make sure you're not being too kind of unrealistic or extreme with what you think your ideal body weight should be. So for me, for example, so 1.5 grams per kilo of body weight for me is 105 grams of protein a day, because I weigh around 70 kilos. I have done for many years. So I have, again, when I do BMI at the doctors, for example, they'll say, oh, you know, it's really high. I'm like, no, I'm fine, honestly. So anyway, 50 kilos times 1.5 is 105 grams of protein. And I prefer to go for the even more optimal dose, which is 2 grams of protein per kilo of body weight, ideal body weight. So for me, that's 140 grams. So then I split that across 3 meals a day, or sometimes 3 meals and a snack, for example, in the afternoon. If my lunch to dinner gap is going to be long and maybe I've been to the gym, then I need something to, you know, to bridge that gap between lunch and dinner. So then I eat about 40 grams of protein with all meals. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, 40 grams of protein. And then an afternoon snack, if I have one, usually gives me another 20 grams. So I hit my 140. So I'm kind of between 120 and 140 a day, basically. And the more protein, the more muscle, the more protein we have, the more muscle we can preserve and then help to build alongside our weightlifting efforts as well. And the more we can keep our blood sugar levels balanced and insulin under control, and therefore manage belly fat, because protein is the key nutrient needed for managing blood sugar levels appropriately, and blood sugar has a huge impact on our weight. So that's something that is the case in all phases of life. I'm kind of today focusing on the things that really start to change as we move into our 40s. And I'll do a whole episode on protein soon, so listen out for that. And next, we have changes to carbohydrate tolerance and becoming more prone to being what's known as insulin resistant. So the erratic fluctuations in estrogen levels that happen throughout perimenopause, so that's starting early 40s or even late, well, usually early 40s, we're starting to see these more erratic fluctuations in estrogen rather than the more gentle ebb and flow that we saw in our 20s and 30s. So again, go back to episodes 2 and 3 to learn more about that if you haven't listened to those yet. So whilst that starts in our early to mid 40s, and then estrogen's subsequent decline the closer we get to reaching menopause, so later 40s and upwards, that situation with estrogen can start to cause the brain and body cells to be what's known as less sensitive to insulin, which is essentially what insulin resistance is. So insulin sensitive cells is a really good thing. Insulin resistant cells is not a good thing. So insulin resistance comes before type 2 diabetes. If we leave insulin resistance unaddressed, it can eventually develop into type 2 diabetes. So estrogen imbalance and optimal levels keeps our cells insulin sensitive. And then as estrogen changes in our 40s, so does our ability to control insulin. So this means we start to become less tolerant of the carbs that we eat than we were in our 20s and 30s. So it doesn't mean that we need to ditch carbs altogether. It simply just means that we need to become more mindful of how much we eat and the form of carbs that we choose. So for example, if we are reliant on white wraps, bagels, baguettes, big bowls of pasta, big bowls of rice, big bowls of oats for breakfast or toast for breakfast, that will become more of a problem for us and our weight in our 40s because we just can't process them as efficiently as we did before. So it's simply about addressing the types of carbs that we rely on and the amount that we have as well. We can't just be as gung-ho, I guess, with carbs as we were in our 20s and 30s now that we're in our 40s, because we're just not as efficient at breaking them down and managing the blood sugar breakdown from them. So for example, a fist-sized serving of brown rice would be absolutely fine, and it's the healthy amount and a good type of carbohydrate because it's what's known as a complex carbohydrate. So brown rice breaks down much slower into glucose than, say, white rice. But a long white baguette for lunch with a bag of crisps and a flapjack isn't so much. You know, that's not going to work as well in our 40s as it would have done in the decades before, because it's just going to provide too much, going to break down into too much sugar too quickly. And at that point in our life, we're not able to manage to kind of process that high blood sugar level as well in our 40s as we were before. So we want to eat in a way that controls blood sugar fluctuations within a healthy range all day. It's natural for blood sugar levels to fluctuate up and down throughout the day in response to our food and some other things, but we want it to just fluctuate within a healthy range. And we do this through eating protein with all of our meals and being mindful of our carb choices. And this matters now more than ever before. So if we're eating in a way that causes blood sugar levels to rise high above its ideal range, then the body needs to produce more insulin in order to handle the excess glucose or sugar, because insulin is responsible for moving sugar that's released into the bloodstream from our food into our cells, where it can be used as energy or stored as energy to be used later. But the more we're releasing insulin in response to these higher blood sugar levels all the time, in response to higher carbs and like more simple carbs that we're eating, the more chance there is that our cells are going to start becoming resistant to the orders of insulin. So this means they become resistant, they ignore, they stop listening. And now the excess sugar can't get into the cell because the cell isn't listening, it's not opening its doors. Insulin then has to store the excess glucose in your fat cells, many of which of those are concentrated around our midsection. So not only does this impact weight and body shape, but it increases the risk of type 2 diabetes, as I said, and heart disease later on in life. So also, if insulin can't get glucose into the brain cells efficiently because they've become resistant, then we get more brain fog, more fatigue, more headaches, and more cognition issues. So having more muscle mass helps to make or keep our cells sensitive to insulin, which therefore helps us to process our carbs better, therefore manage our weight better, and also those symptoms that I just mentioned. The next thing we have is the declining progesterone that's occurring in our 40s as well. Again, talked about that in detail in episodes 2 and 3, because progesterone also plays a role in our metabolic health, which includes our ability to burn fat and build muscle. And it also supports healthy thyroid hormone production. So as progesterone is declining in our 40s, it could just be another contributing factor to this new or more sudden kind of weight gain. So then that brings me on to my next point, which is low thyroid hormone production. So the thyroid gland is our master metabolism regulator. So when the thyroid gland slows down, it kind of has, we experience this general slowing down of a lot of our body processes, metabolism being one of them. So we're more likely to experience weight gain as that metabolism slows down. And as I just said, declining progesterone impacts thyroid health, and also the situation of unopposed estrogen, which happens as a result of declining progesterone. So that basically, again, in episodes 2 and 3, I've talked about it, but basically when we've got estrogen, you know, all throughout the month, but we have progesterone, we produce progesterone in the last 2 weeks of the menstrual cycle, all the way up to menopause, as long as we're having cycles. But the further we move through our 40s, the more likely it is that we're not managing to actually ovulate halfway through our cycles. And therefore, as a result of that, we're not making progesterone. So for the last half of the cycle, when we should have progesterone meeting estrogen and balancing it out, we don't have that anymore. And that means we have estrogen that's unopposed. It's left unbalanced by its partner hormone. And this situation of unopposed estrogen, it's also sometimes called estrogen dominance, which I explained in the last few episodes, that also leads to weight gain. So 40 plus, it's really important to keep an eye on your thyroid blood markers, because this unopposed estrogen does impact thyroid. Low progesterone impacts thyroid. So the key markers to be checking in blood work, say every year, ideally, are TSH, T4, T3, and the two main thyroid antibodies, which are called thyroglobulin, also known as anti-TG, and peroxidase, which is also known as anti-TPO. Ideally, it's also helpful to check free T4 and free T3 as well. So that's your kind of full thyroid blood work panel, which you may have to do privately because I believe on the NHS, it's just T4 and TSH that they tend to check. You might be able to get T3. You would have to ask specifically for the two thyroid antibodies, and you may be able to ask for free T4 and free T3 as well. And then we have the fact that chronic stress and generally overdoing life in our 40s, which is more likely in our 40s than it is in our 20s and 30s. It doesn't mean that in our 20s and 30s we don't have stress and we don't overdo life. We, you know, of course we do. Of course we can go through things in those decades as well. But we are more resilient to stress in our 20s and in our 30s. But as we move into our 40s, that resilience changes. So as progesterone levels decline and estrogen levels fluctuate on its erratic roller coaster, that can make cortisol levels naturally rise. So if we add to that situation where we've already got a natural situation of rising cortisol, but then we also have, let's say, much more stress in our 40s, much more responsibility, chronic modern day stresses are everywhere, you know, then we're going to be more likely to gain weight as a result of imbalances in cortisol from stress in our 40s than we would have done in our 20s and 30s. Stress will always impact weight, just far more so in our 40s is the take home message. So this really means that stress management is way more important in your 40s more than ever before. And definitely, you know, just something to be prioritizing more so than you would have needed to in your 30s. You would have kind of got away with it a lot more. So cortisol is the body's main stress hormone, but it's a big reason for the so-called muffin top, as I've already said, because it has the ability to break down muscle mass, muscle tissue, and convert it into glucose, which is a process called gluconeogenesis. And most of the glucose that it breaks down from your muscle tissue will get stored around your middle, and therefore that's where the muffin top nickname comes from. So where there is a lot of cortisol, or, you know, this general cortisol imbalance from chronic stress and the shift in progesterone and estrogen in our 40s, we just have this situation becoming more likely, breaking down our muscle, converting it into glucose, storing it as fat. So we really need to be like managing stress as much as we can, much better now, more than ever. And it just basically means, you know, making that a priority, putting ourselves and our health as a priority more so now than ever. So yeah, essentially this new higher cortisol state, then this change in our ability to process carbohydrates, this becoming more prone to being insulin resistant rather than insulin sensitive, and not managing our blood sugar levels as efficiently as before. It's this, you know, can be this one big pot, this melting pot of issues that make us more prone to gaining weight here. So I really hope that this information has been insightful and been helpful for you. And in the next episode, I'm going to go through some helpful tips and tricks for managing our weight more successfully in our 40s. So I'll be going into more detail on some of the things I've talked about already, kind of touched on in this episode, like the exercise style and the food piece. So we'll go into that in more detail in the next episode. And thank you for listening today, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.